purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. According to one's destiny, one enjoys allotted happiness and distress even though one keeps himself in one place. This is the injunction of the Shastras. When one is spiritually situated, he may stay in one place and all his necessities will be supplied by the arrangement of the Supreme Controller. Unless one is a preacher, there is no need to travel all over the world. Got it? A person can stay in one place and execute devotional service suitably according to time and circumstance. When Vrishabhadeva saw that he was simply being disturbed by traveling throughout the world, he decided to lie down in one place like a python. Thus he ate, drank, and he passed stool and urine and smeared his body with them so that people would not disturb him. So Om Meghanat Tividanda Shaganan Janah Shlakaya Chakshur Midiham Gena Tasmai Shri Purve Maha. So this is the problem of living in society, that people disturb you no matter what you're doing. It's like devotees would go out in Sankirtan and people would, and they would distributing books, and Prabhupada would say, and people would say, get a job. And they would get angry. I even got punched out in Sankirtan so many times. So, of course, that's serving the Lord. So it's not something that's undesirable. You actually get purified by those particular activities. But if one really wants to absorb themselves in Krishna consciousness, it's very hard, especially in the modern world where you get all these methods of communication. Because not only do people come up to you like in a physical, you know, face-to-face basis, but they're approaching you through the internet every day. You know, just like when I download my email in the morning, it's something like 50 emails. I mean, of course, some of them are spam. I'm not talking about ham. You know, the canned ham that people eat. I'm talking about, you know, just like make your body stronger so you can enjoy sex life. You know, half of the things are like that. But still, I mean, there's so many things that are just bombarding you continually. And of course, if one's a devotee, those things are service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if you're not a devotee, or even if you don't have like service in the preaching mission, all these things that bombard you from family and friends and everything like that can cause a real disturbance to your mind. Especially if you happen to be someone who attracts people, and especially it must be difficult if one's an attractive young girl, because then you're always getting proposals. I mean, sometimes I communicate with some of my disciples who are young in different places in the world, and men are coming up and saying this and that. So there's an interesting story that Prabhupada tells, and I'm sure you're all familiar with it, how the women can deal with that. And it's very similar to the story here. And of course, it's a typical story of liquid beauty. Because, you know, people attract you. Of course, if you're a very attractive man, too, you get women. So the men can also employ the same procedure. Although I've never heard that story yet. It's actually quite interesting. Therefore, it's recommended that if one's a sannyasi, one should not be very attractive. One should... Or at least one should act in such a way that he's not attractive. So, anyway, so the story of liquid beauty is as follows. This is what you ladies should do. Of course, any young ladies here? Yeah, there's one. So what happens is the men, they become very attracted to the, you know, physical beauty. Like the women, they want some security and things like that. But the men, they just, you know, that's why they have these beauty pageants. Of course, nowadays, the men have beauty pageants too, right? You know, Mr. World or something like that. So what happens is it's like, I mean, the ladies are like, I'm not saying it in a negative way, but it's just like when someone's fishing, there's a worm on a hook. You understand what I'm talking about? I'm not saying the women are worms. Please don't misquote me. But it's like, it's just like they're, you know, the physical beauty of the ladies, whatever. Of course, I'm not going to get into the stool, mucus, and urine stuff covered by a nice layer of skin. So what happens is that the men get attracted and then they say so many things to try to lure the women into a relationship. Of course, in the old days it was marriage, but now it's a relationship, right? This is my relationship. So this lady, of course, the Prabhupada tells a story about a prince who approaches this lady who's extremely attractive, and she was getting so many proposals, and she really just wanted to chant Hare Krishna like Lord Rishabhadev here and not be disturbed by anybody. Right? So the prince approached and said, "Wow, your eyes are like lotus petals. Your ears are like, what, conchils? I don't know. And your hair is like the trees in the forest." I don't even know what to say. But anyway, he said something that would normally attract a lady. Because, you know, ladies, that's another thing. Ladies sometimes have an affinity for, let's say, being praised for their physical beauty. But for men, it's not as much. I mean, maybe muscles or something. Like if you go up to a man and say, "Your eyes are like lotus petals," huh? Yeah, it's just like, huh? You know, but the women have different ways to approach men. They say, "You are so intelligent." Isn't that? And then the men get all mushy when they hear that. I remember when I was in high school. And I was very expert in mathematics. And I was tutoring the ladies, because they weren't so expert in mathematics. I'm not saying ladies can't be expert in mathematics. I have to be careful nowadays. So anyway, I was teaching how to use what's called a slide rule. You know, slide rule. Anyway, it's an old method of calculating things that they don't use anymore. And the ladies, you know, I finished my class and the lady said, "You're so intelligent." And blinked her eye. And I was thinking, "Wow, this is nice." Anyway, so, because I was in Maya at that time, what can I say? Not that I chanted my rounds. I didn't go, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare." So anyway, so this prince, getting back to the story, of course, the prince approached the lady and said, "You know, you're so beautiful, your eyes are like stars, or teeth are like stars, and will you marry me?" Like I said, in that time things were much more dharmic. He didn't say, "Let's go out for a date, baby." He said, "Will you marry me?" You know, obviously he wanted to do it dharmically. People get really bewildered by like Shantanu, we were talking about the other day, got really bewildered with the beauty of Ganga Devi. You know, he was ready to just like put up with any damn thing from her, even killing her own children because of her, you know, physical beauty. It's so bewildering. Anyway, so she thought, you know, "What is this guy? I just want to chant my rounds." You know, marriage, you get married, there's so much entanglement, you gotta get a job, you gotta build a house, you gotta have so much furniture. Anyway, she was thinking like that. "I just want to chant Hare Krishna, I'm a devotee, you know." But he didn't like any of those excuses. He said to her, "You know, we can be devotees together and chant Hare Krishna together." I'm adding a little to the story, of course. But she was thinking, "You know, I just want to chant. Leave me alone, baby." You know, whatever. And then he was so insistent, she said, "Okay, I agree. But come back. Give me your ring now." Actually, it's funny. Like, sometimes we have people who propose to different ladies and they have rings with different ladies all around the world that eventually didn't accept them. But anyway, that's a different story. So, give me your ring and then come back in about a week or two, and then I just like, you know, want to make myself beautiful. So, you know, just like sometimes someone goes on a date and the girl's upstairs and the boy's waiting for the girl, she's just making herself attractive. And so what she did is that, we know the story, of course, that for 2 weeks she just took purgatives. You know, she ate chocolate bars. But the chocolate bars were Ex-lax. And she kept it all in nice little bottles. And he comes back. So this is very similar to the story here. He comes back and he's all ready, you know, he has a horse ready for the marriage ceremony. Because actually when you get married in India, the man rides on a horse, he puts on a crown. The Prabhupada said, of course, king for a day, slave for a lifetime. When Prabhupada saw one of these processions. And nowadays they have these like rickshaws with all sorts of speakers on them, you know. You seen this? It's interesting. They have like an amplifier and like 25 of these big like horn sweet speakers on it. And they go around tooting and playing some stuff. And even they have bands playing trombones and trumpets in India. You know, it's like a whole thing. But that's all right. I mean, what I've read about Lord Chaitanya's marriage was something like that too. But that's a marriage that we really like to hear about. So then what happened is he came back and he saw this lady who looked less than desirable, to say the least. And he asked, "Where's your beauty?" And of course she took him down to the basement where she kept all these jars of her liquid beauty and displayed it to him. And he said, "What kind of beauty is this?" And she said, "Liquid beauty." I love that story. I haven't told it in a long time. But I love this story because it really illustrates what the beauties of this world. But the reason I'm telling the story is that, you know, devotees do things sometimes so that people won't disturb them. They just want to... They're so absorbed in chanting Krishna's name, having so much nectar and Krishna consciousness. And Lord Vrishabhadev was experiencing that too. You know, I'm enjoying myself. Don't bug me. It's like, even in the material world, like when, let's say a child is absorbed in watching some TV show and the parent comes up and says, "It's time to do homework." I don't know if you've ever experienced this. "It's time to do your homework." The child gets angry at the parent. Says, "Don't bug me. Leave me alone." Right? Or "It's time to eat." "Don't bug me. Leave me alone." So it's the same thing with a pure devotee. The pure devotee is thinking, "Don't bug me. I'm enjoying myself chanting Hare Krishna. Leave me alone." And there's other stories too, not just this liquid beauty story, of course. There's the story of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who during the final days, or was a year or two of his pastimes, he just wanted to be absorbed in Krishna's name. So he just made believe he was sick. I mean, it's a little bit different than the stool and the urine stuff here. But he just made believe he was sick. And because of that, he was able to just chant his japa and be absorbed in practically in samadhi. And then another story, of course, is the story of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, he was approached by a very wealthy man. And the wealthy man said, "You know, how can I serve you?" I mean, something I would like if a wealthy man approached me. I'd be in ecstasy. "Well, let me get my list together, my Christmas list." But he didn't say that because we're not quite on the level of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So what he said is, "You can serve me by letting me have a place in your latrine to chant japa." And you know, latrine, for those of you who don't know what a latrine is, I mean, that's not a common word in America. It means like an outhouse. You understand? You know what an outhouse is? Mm-hmm. Those are the little things in America. You have like a half moon on the door. You ever seen those? And it's right. When we came to Hillsboro, people used to have them like outside their houses. They didn't use them so much anymore. But you could see the old outhouses there. And so he said, "Just let me chant there." And the guy was astounded. "You know, come on. What do you want to chant in a latrine for?" And he said, "That's what I want. If you really want to satisfy me, give it to me." So, of course, this gentleman, he cleaned up the latrine. Obviously, he didn't say, "Okay, here's the door. Open the door and go in and chant." He actually cleaned it up and, I guess, sealed up the holes in the ground where people, you know, did their thing. And repainted and everything. But he chanted in there, and he was so happy. And sometimes people would come and try to imitate. And they would go in the room next to him, because I guess it was a multi-room latrine. And he would scream at them, "Why are you imitating and simply thinking of sex life? Get out of here!" So, because people would imitate that renounced stage, because that renounced stage is like the stage of a Babaji, where you're just supposed to be absorbed in chanting the Lord's holy names. So really, devotees think like that. They're looking for ways to avoid what we call social intercourse, you know, interacting with people. Because there's so much wasted time, you know, people calling on the phone, "How are you? I'm fine. What are you doing? I'm talking to you on the phone." That's what my mother does. She calls me on the phone. She says, "What are you doing now?" "I'm talking to you on the phone." And it gets her angry as hell. "So, tell me about your life." "I'm doing the same thing I always did. Chanting Hare Krishna. You're not interested in it." It's hard for her to understand that. And she says, "You know, how do you have people coming to the Sunday feast?" "Yes." You know, all these questions, the same questions over and over again. "How are you doing financially?" "Okay." "Send money." "No." So it's just like all these questions and answers, just like Prabhupada talked about, in the Bhagavad Gita, it talks about everybody is asking questions and answers, right? The birds are asking questions. You know, where is food? Where is, you know, the birds that, where they're chirping and their beautiful colors. It's quite interesting, like someone gave me this National Geographic and there was a whole article about the birds of paradise. I don't know if you've heard of that before. But there are birds that come from Australia, parts of Australia, and anyway, that part of the world. And it's all the different colors and everything like that. You know, people. But what are the colors for? Just attracting the other birds to come to them. It's interesting with birds, the males are more attractive than the females. Interesting, isn't it? Like the peahen, that's the female peacock, if you didn't know that, is really plain Jane. It looks all right, but it's not something, not something you're going to fall in love with, you know. It's plain white. You know, she's wearing white sari. I mean, what could you do? But the male, especially, but only during the mating season. The rest of the year, you know, he has a few little feathers sticking out of him. But during the mating season, he's like, you know, gorgeous as hell, you know. You know, I'd practically get married to him. He's so attractive. And it's interesting during the mating season, the dances they do. I mean, when we first went to Miami, there was a place called New Miami, Naimi Sharanya. You remember that? And they had peacocks there. And during the mating season, they open up their feathers like that and just dance and everything like that. And of course, the men were so agitated that if you went near them, they would attack you during the mating season. It was just like a radar antenna. It's a radar antenna, and you know, if a female came, it was just like turning this way and that way. It was really funny, isn't it? They were just like, "Oh, the female is wrong." And she acted uninterested. And eventually he just went for it. But anyway, so there's so many questions and answers in this world. You know, so much prajapa, even the animals are engaged in. And then the devotee just wants to minimize these things. I mean, sometimes you got to ask some questions like, you know, "Where is such and such street? You know, turn this way." That's all right. When you're going on a preaching engagement or doing something. Because you have a GPS for that now. So you minimize these things, so a devotee makes these arrangements sometimes to do that. All right, so that's one reason Lord Vrishabhadev was doing that. Another reason he was doing that was out of compassion. Because people criticize. I mean, people criticize devotees, and when they criticize Vaishnavas, particularly they criticize Lord Vrishabhadev, then they're sending themselves to hell. So Lord Vishalade just wanted to get away from all the people, because he was describing the previous verse, he was going into all these towns and villages, and they were passing there in front of him, and throwing things, and doing all sorts of abominable, calling him names. And so that's a major offense. So he actually wanted to avoid people doing that. So therefore, that's ultimately why he engaged in this process of just lying in his own stool and urine like a python, so nobody would criticize him or bother him, and he even traveled to all the villages. So this is interesting, because whenever the Lord does something, he has an exoteric as well as esoteric purpose for doing things. In other words, there's his own purpose and then the purpose to help people. And I was thinking about this in regard to Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. It's interesting that the exoteric reason, in other words, the apparent reason, that Lord Chaitanya did his, what we would probably have termed a non-violent protest against the Qazi. I think you all know that story. There was this Qazi, the Muslim leader, and the Qazi was trying to stop Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan move. In fact, he even had some mridangas broken. And Lord Chaitanya got so upset and angry, he said, I'm going to kill all those Muslims, all those Malachas, Yavanas. There's not going to be a single one left alive. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is merciful. He didn't actually do that. But he got together this giant parade or protest movement, nonviolent protest. You know, people think that Gandhi was the originator of it. It got a little violent, actually, because actually when they got to the Qazi's house, they tore up his garden and part of the house. So it wasn't completely nonviolent. But, you know, they didn't kill the Qazi, so it wasn't nonviolent in that respect. So anyway, so he went out and got to the Qazi. We all know the story from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The Qazi was hiding in his house. Eventually the Qazi came out, and he had a discussion with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the Shastras, and he revealed to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Lord Nrsingadev had climbed on his chest and, you know, started to rip open his chest and threatened him. And then the Qazi said, from this day forward, I'm not going to impede your Sankirtan movement anymore. So we know that story. But that's like the exoteric reason for the, to keep the Qazi from interfering with Sankirtan. But there's actually another reason too, which is really nectarian, I just found out yesterday, was that when Lord Chaitanya used to hold his Sankirtan performances, it was just pure devotees allowed. You know, there was a bouncer stationed at the door. And when anyone else snuck in, Lord Chaitanya immediately detected them. You know, one time there was even a pure brahmachari who was living by just drinking milk. I mean, you think it's pure brahmachari, no material desires. And he really wanted to get in. Finally, he convinced Srivas Thakur to let him in. And he was hiding. And he was, you know, pretty qualified, much more qualified than I would ever be. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got really angry when he discovered, because there was no ecstasy. Lord Chaitanya's ecstasy would sort of go away if there was some non-devotee there. It's interesting, isn't it? Of course, we also have that injunction, you're not supposed to worship the deities in front of non-devotees. But anyway, but then Prabhupada said we should bring everyone in to see the deity. So there's this sort of little contradiction there. But that's transcendental contradiction. So so Lord Chaitanya discovered this brahmachari. He'd been a brahmachari his whole life, and just living by drinking milk. And Lord Chaitanya said, you know, you can't be Krishna conscious just by executing bodily austerities, just by drinking milk. And he basically had the guy, you know, was ready to kill the guy almost. Of course, devotee. And this devotee was so humble that Lord Chaitanya eventually accepted him back and embraced him. And then he got Lord Chaitanya's mercy. But generally, nobody could get in. And so all the villagers, and there were many great Vaishnavas. I mean, anyone practically born in Navadvipa area is a great Vaishnava. Of course, there were many offenders too, but there were many Vaishnavas who really wanted to see the kirtan. I mean, there were millions of devotees there. And they really wanted to see Lord Chaitanya's kirtan. And they weren't allowed to see. So they were praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we want to see Lord Chaitanya dance. And because of their prayers, this is the esoteric thing, because of their prayers, then Lord Chaitanya enacted this whole pastime of attacking Mukasi's house. Because they wanted to see Lord Chaitanya dance. It's nice, isn't it? And Lord Chaitanya was so merciful, he was reciprocating with them in that way. And everybody in all the towns and villages, as they say, every town and village, saw Lord Chaitanya dance. And they all became immersed in pure Krishna consciousness, except for the offenders. The offenders were just... we're just thinking, wow, can't wait till he gets to the cousins, he's going to get chastised. But the opposite thing happened at that particular point. So anyway, so that's the point here. Lord Vrishabhadev was thinking mercifully towards the living entities, being an incarnation of the Lord and acting like a pure devotee, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's exhibiting this Kripam Buddhi Yastra Maham Prapadye. He's exhibiting this unlimited compassion towards the living entities and remaining in one place so that it wouldn't commit offenses. And this is really what Vaishnavas do. Even if they're attacked, they make some adjustments so that they don't get offended because they're concerned with others. Even if they're attacked, like Haridas Thakur, they're concerned with others. Ambarish Maharaj, attacked by Durvasa Muni, he never gave up his compassion towards those who are inimical to him. So this is a lesson for us. That if someone attacks us, and that will happen, not if, but when someone attacks us, we just remain compassionate towards them and pray for their welfare and maybe make a little adjustment so they don't commit more offenses too. That's actually important. Of course, we don't give up our service, we don't change our life, but this mood of compassion has to be exhibited by us. So any questions or comments about these things? Yeah.
Because Lord Vrishabhadev was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, was his stool and urine not contaminated and actually fragrant?
Yeah, it was fragrant. That's described in the next verse. It was a pleasant fragrance. I mean, even when a devotee becomes purified, or even when a demon becomes purified, there's a story of Putana, that Putana certainly was a nefarious demon, but when she became killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and they burnt her body, we were reading that the other day to Rasapriya, and then when they burnt her body, it gave off such a wonderful fragrance for many, many miles around. And normally, you know, bodies, dead bodies, burning bodies. I mean, you don't hang around crematoriums. Oh, what a wonderful smell. So, you know, when there's something spiritual like that, it doesn't smell bad. Of course, with us, we should not imitate. Prabhupada said you can execute this Jata Yoga process that Lord Vrishabhadev did if you could make your stool and urine smell like that. It's described, the next verse which we'll read is so aromatic that they filled 80 miles of the countryside with a pleasant fragrance. Don't imitate. Of course, for a mother, I guess the child's stool and urine is like a pleasant fragrance. But for the rest of us, it's hellish. What? Any other questions?
Yeah, on Sunday night, Prabhupada Prabhu was giving a class and he had different people with different topics. And one of the topics was Vaishnava Aparad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, for many of the senior devotees, even like Jagat Purusha Menu, so well, that's pretty, gets pretty scary because he was talking about how even if you unknowingly offend someone, like not even intentionally, like let's say you happen to be, he gave the story, you know, a devotee that was laughing, And then a sage came by who was deformed or limping.
No, he was laughing at the sage.
Oh, he didn't.
That, no, he didn't explain the whole story. Yeah, that was Astavakra Muni.
No, this was a different story, though. The one with Astavakra Muni, I know.
Yeah.
He said it was that. I don't know if he said it was one of the Goswamis that he was absorbed in Radha Krishna pastimes and laughing about Radha Krishna pastimes, and then someone else came by and he happened to laugh, and that person took offense, and you know.
Yeah, well, that was a pastime.
So my,
yeah, I know those stories. Yeah.
So then, my question is like, it seems that we, you know, unknowingly, we, you know, commit unlimited offenses, and you know, so.
Yeah.
It just all seemed overwhelming, and then Mother Golokana and the priest said, well, what if you apologize in your mind? He said, no, you have to approach the person. But then on a practical level, sometimes people have the experience that say they want to approach someone to ask for forgiveness, but the person doesn't want to be approached.
Or the person left his body.
Yeah, so I mean,
I think to explain things in that way is going to discourage people from Krishna consciousness. It's not really a fact that, you know, by accident, you know, you're laughing at someone else, that someone takes offense. I mean, that was a pastime with the Goswamis. That you can't use that. You can't use that to, you know, justify, you know, an understanding of what happens in the modern world. You don't take a pastime and impose it upon your own behavior. No, I mean, then you know, let's say if you're snoring at night and happens to be a Vaishnava next to you, and you wake him up in the middle of the night, you committed a mad elephant offense. I mean, come on. I mean, you become so paranoid that you just want to end it all and merge in the Brahman, and then you just join Donovan, you know. You know, he knows that. I mean, you just want to merge, just get out. You know, I don't want devotional service. It's just too paranoid here, you know. It's not actually a fact. One has to do something deliberately to offend a Vaishnava. I think that's, you know, it's going to discourage people from Krishna consciousness to explain things. Yeah. No. I mean, if one neglects a Vaishnava, I mean, like I gave the example before, let's say a Vaishnava is right there and you see a Vaishnava is cleaning for himself and doing this and doing that, and you don't offer help. That's offensive. But I'm just saying it's not a bad elephant offense, it's just a violation of etiquette. And if one violates etiquette, then you could never attain Krishna's mercy or Krishna's favor. But that's an obvious thing. Yeah, purposely ignores serving a Vaishnava when you could serve a Vaishnava. That's a different thing. But if, you know, if you sneeze by accident and it upsets a Vaishnava, you know. I mean, Hare Krishna. You know, I'm going to join Maharishi Mahesh over here.
Yeah,